Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Proudly sponsored by Carryout, Ireland's leading independent off-licence. Carryout.ie.
We are joined once again by Esther McCarthy and Tomás Clancy. Good afternoon.
Hello.
To you both. Good afternoon.
How are you?
You're both looking fantastic. Did you recognise Tank Girl outside there when you were sitting outside?
Am I allowed to admit? No.
No.
I can be a bit of a spacer, though. I could walk past people and not recognize
know who they are.
Yeah, yeah. I am a bit of a spacer like that.
Yeah. Well, she hasn't been, though. She hasn't been in many movies. It's probably, you know, Orange is the New Black is the contemporary, the best
yeah.
known thing
yeah.
That she'd be known for.
I knew she was famous, though, because she had that kind of stance of people who were famous and sunglasses of people who were famous. So I knew she was a
she
star.
She was wearing her sunglasses indoors.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what they do. That's how you know.
That's
how
way.
You signal to people I'm famous. I'm wearing my sunglasses indoors. What movies are we going to be talking about today?
We have reached peak silly season.
Oh, no.
So we have Jason Statham beating up a prehistoric monster shark in The Meg.
Right. Does he punch it in the head?
He actually does at one stage.
He actually
Thank
punches
God.
It in the head.
Yes.
That is cool.
Yes. So that's good fun. And then we have... A film that breaks a lot of rules, I suppose. It's called Sergeant Stubby, An Unlikely Hero. And it's not your typical animated film, because I know kids are all fed, you know, sugar fed, a diet of animated awesomeness. But this is an educational animated film. If that sounds like the train set, the wooden train you got for Christmas when you wanted games and stuff. Well, it's not the case, because this is... really sweet, actually. Very sweet. And there's a Cork connection to it, because the director he has a holiday home in Kinsale, and he's actually setting up an animated studio in Kinsale to
oh,
make
right.
a sequel to Sergeant
okay.
Stubby.
Okay.
Who is, it was a story I knew very little about. It was a dog during World War II who befriended a soldier in this army camp in the US, and when they travelled to France, he was secreted onto the ship and ended up on the trenches with all these men, but ended up getting loads of medals and becoming a bit of a mascot for the US Army, because
right.
he was able to hear artillery approaching artillery fire before the soldiers were, so he would warn them, and he was famously feated by the residents of a French village who were all saved because he detected an incoming mustard gas attack, and they made him a little coat to put his medals on. It's a really sweet story, and I knew very little about it, so that's quite cute. We'll talk about that as
right.
well.
Right. Is it a kids movie per se, or
it's a funny one. I think if you're a history mad parent who brings your kids to the cinema and have long wanted something to engage in, then you're going to be very happy here.
That's a very specific target. I
know, and that's what I like about it. I like that they had the chutzpah to make this, actually, and they made it outside the studio system and independently, and I did really think it was a very sweet film. I think the dog is cute and expressive enough as well, and yeah, I think it's Lassie Comes Home set during the war. What's not to like, you know?
Okay,
yeah.
All right. But would you guess it'll do well at the box office?
I think it will.
I think
it will.
Afternoon.
I mean, look, it's not on trend. I mean, we've had an awesome period of animation, but everything's a very, very competently made animation. It's a tough category to break into, you
yeah.
know. But it's definitely for kids who are used to being diet fed a certain type of animation film. It might take them a little bit of time to adjust, I think. But it's by no means po-faced. It's very sweet and funny.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. All right. We'll be talking about those over the next hour or so. And today's two wines are what, Tomás?
Our wines were, one is from Valpolcello. So we're back into northern Italy to Lake Garda, to the beloved region, well, beloved by George Clooney, of course, with his holiday home there.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, the poet Dante before that, and emperors all had their own villas all along the south coast of Lake Garda. And it's a beautiful, beautiful spot. And the village and the vineyards of Valpolcello all look onto the bottom of Lake Garda. So even though it's in the middle of the country and it's obviously very hot, because it's Lake Garda, which goes straight up into the Alps, it always gets a blast of cold air, which keeps it at a temperate, moderate, cool climate. And so we get great big red wines from there. And so Amarone is from there. And what we're looking at here is a baby Amarone, a Rapasso. And I think it's fairly amazing, good price, and very interesting.
Did they make anything north of there, wine-wise?
Yes, if you press on north, you get up into the Alto Adige and you get white wines. You tend to get a lot of white wines because it's very cool indeed. And you get thin white wines. And a bit to the right of them, a bit to the east of them, is kind of Suave. And a little bit to the north of that is Prosecco.
Right, okay.
So it's that kind of region. It's cool enough to make it that way. But this is a warm heart, which is happy enough because Verona's there and home of Romeo and Juliet and all the rest of it. And it's a nice sweet spot where you can get warm during the day, really roasty toasty, and then you get lovely cooling wind in the evening so you can sleep. And the grapes are the same thing. They have the same kind of temperature variation interests that we do. And the other wine is a Chardonnay from Australia. This one's from Coonawarra. Coonawarra is one of the cooler climate regions in Australia, but saying that about Australia when it's currently on fire does mean
funny,
that
there's
it's
a question in about that. In Northern California, those fires, presumably that's going to must have some effect. The smoke might have some effect.
It has a huge effect. I mean, apart from anything else, I've been talking to people in California about this because I was talking to various wineries to see whether they were being affected by it, and they now talk certainly for the last 5 years about the fire season. So that's what they talk. You know, they actually discuss it in terms of that. So it's not just spring, autumn season. They talk about, you know, the fire, the big fire season. This is a little bit north of where it was last year. So Mendocino County and Sonoma really got hit badly last year. And even the sort of two or three main towns, a lot of wineries got hit by it. What happens is the sky gets blocked out because of the smoke. So they lose ripening time. So you get a bit of that problem. But the real problem is the smoke taint. Anyone who's ever had a fire, in any house or anything like that, you know, it doesn't matter, years later you still get a whiff on a warm day. So you do get smoke taint and smoke damage from that. But really the problem last year was just wineries burnt down. What their issue is that they have built in former forests. They've hacked back the forest to create these vines, and they did that 200 years ago. But if you want to be safe, you want to have those forests 100 miles back, just 5 miles back. And so when the forests go up like tinder, as they do, and that's a very natural process, every sort of, you know, a few decades it does happen, they're just right in the path of it. And it's a dry farming business. So if you're in the crop business, it doesn't really affect the kind of a lot of the fruiting and other kinds of farming businesses where you're watering a lot. Where you're not watering and you're keeping your grounds dry just for the sake of it, you're just another part of the tinder that's ready to go up. It's harsh, and they're having trouble.
Yeah. So even if the fire is 5 miles away, that smoke, will that destroy the crop or you're getting a lot of very smoky wines?
You're getting a lot of smoky wines. They could be trying to sell what we would like to be talking about. Say a nice Pulle Fumé. It does destroy them because it puts a little taint on them. Now, there's a long way to go. But the problem is that, because they get to ferment them and change them and so forth. But the whole problem with grapes, as opposed to, say, if you had this happening to corn or wheat, is that the grape is just 90% water. So it's really absorbing the flavour of the smoke that's going up in it. So that's the problem for them. Even if they survive the fire, the smoke is going to taint or could potentially taint some of their materials.
In Spain and Portugal, now, that, in fairness, hasn't been as many fires reported, but might there be a similar effect there?
They do have a similar effect, but it's actually very different because the vineyard regions that I was in, in the Douro Valley when the place was on fire, and the fires tend to be in the regions where there's some scrubland and so forth. The vineyard regions of the Iberian, of Spain and Portugal are so far away from the places where there's forest because they've done it 1,000 years ago and
they looked in that way.
It's really not a problem. So they do not have the problems. The fire there, the problem for them is that what's happened is that people have built near these because there's shade and water and they're beautiful and you tend to build near them. Whereas the vineyards are away in open big flat plains, very unadventurous and uninteresting to look at, but perfectly safe from fire.
You know? Right. But though, when you're getting 40 degree temperatures, which for even there is, you know,
they're losing the crop. The crop is burning. Right, nice. There's no, it's not on fire, but it's shriveling. So what you're getting is you're getting essentially like sultanas and raisins are being created and they're burning away. But before that happens, and so the 2018 crop, you just keep an eye out for it. Before it happens, as the grapes are getting baked all the time with high heat, they throw out a lot of glycerol as their own defense. That's their defense mechanism against the sun. Mm. And that glycerol is sugar, is high in fructose. And so when you do come to ferment them in a month's time, they're going to find they've got 14% alcohol, 15% alcohol. They'll have huge alcohol levels because of the glycerol that's being thrown because of the heat.
Yeah,
it's day follows night, and that's the problem. There's going to be that is the problem for them.
Right. Okay. Cool. That'd be interesting years. Fascinating years of wine, won't it? Right. We have to take a break. Back in a couple of minutes. 1890 453 106 is our low call number. Our text number is 53106. That will cost you 30 cent. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter or send us an email to afternoon@newstalk.com. Tomás Clancy and Esther McCarthy are with us for Movies and Booze. We've already been chatting about what we're going to be talking about over the next hour or so. A texter says, Ash, you're on A League of Their Own was brilliant. Gina Davis, Madonna, a really great movie. That's because we had Laurie Petty in earlier on. Has Tomás seen this blue wine that's on sale? Vindigo wine, it's called. What could possibly be making the wine blue?
I have seen it. It's a colorant. It's a food safe colorant being used to it. Now they're taking it from they're extracting it from various legitimate what they call authentic sources. You know, so some flowers, some minerals, and so forth. But it's a colorant. That's all it is. It's and they extract it from the skin. They can extract it from the skin of even maybe some of the red grapes, and they pull out the blue and then and put it in that way. It's a fine thing. It's absolutely sort of There's nothing authentic about it. Mm. So it doesn't represent what you get when you press grapes. It doesn't get what you press or soak grapes in the skin. So in that way, it's running completely counter to the entire modern movement in food, in everything about authenticity and purity and straightforwardness. It's kind of, it harks back to the 1970s or 1980s shoulder pad kind of era to me. And then there used to be all these ads for red, white or blue.
Yes.
And it was actually for Blue Nun at the time. So it's red, white or blue. And you're back to it. I'm sure there's nothing wrong with it. It was a startup by half a dozen tech people in they were tech entrepreneurs in Spain. They're all in, you know, sort of small startup groups, and they thought, oh, we should do something odd. And they worked out that maybe this would be the right way to do it. They did some crowdfunding on it and they managed to roll it out. So it's out there. It's fine.
Is it a red wine that's dyed blue or a white wine that's dyed blue?
Well, I suppose we'd say it's a white wine that's dyed blue, but it's actually using red grapes. But it is blue and it's very clearly blue. But it feels to me like, you know, that some of those Alco Pops. It has the same kind of thing, but it tastes like wine. It definitely tastes like wine, but it's a gimmick. It's very sweet. I would say the only thing was it was kind of sickly sweet, so I wouldn't be rushing to it now.
Anya in Mayo wants to know where she can get a red Bardolino wine.
You can get, there's a Bardolino by you can get one in O'Brien's. O'Brien's have one. It's actually from the region we're talking about now today. It's in the Valpolcello Amarone region. It's in Verona and the hinterland of Venice. So you'll find one in Zaccardi. I'm trying to think of the name. I'll get it in the end. But there's a good example in the Italian section in O'Brien's.
Right. Okay. That's pretty straightforward, and there's plenty of them. I heard something. I heard that they're going to release a Toy Story 4. Has Esther heard anything about that?
Yeah, I think it's in the works. Yeah, I think it's well into the planning stages. Yep.
Crikey!
I'm on board with that. I'm good with that.
Yeah, I'd be good with that too. But I thought they were. Maybe I'm wrong here. That they were definitive. They weren't going to make any more.
I think it came to a natural. The trilogy is a complete natural thing in itself. But I think with those toys going to the new home, you have magnificent potential for it starting over again.
To live in, maybe they could do it that way.
Yeah, okay, that
would be interesting. Can you please tell me where I can get a Black Stallion wine from the Napa Valley?
I don't know it. That's not ringing any bells for me. Black Stallion. California wines are not well circulated in this country from the smaller sort of producers. So Black Stallion, I'm not outrageously familiar with it, but you often find that kind of those kind of names do get associated with Zinfandels, there are, you know, Black Stallion, Wild Bear, and a few names like that. Sort of the furry but vicious animal tends to be the one from there. No, we have a large importation of American wine, but under the headings like Ernst & Julio Gallo and Sutter's Ranch and so forth, they are American. So when you look at it, it looks like we're importing vast amounts of American wine, and we are. But when you'd look for a particular Californian, you can often find yourself in a lacuna. I would go and have a look in independents like, say, 64 Wines or in Baggot Street Wines. And there's a nice section in O'Brien, so I'd have a look there as well. Yeah.
On the subject of the Meg that we are going to be talking about, someone says, I'm not going to lie. As soon as I saw that Jason Statham was going to be fighting a prehistoric shark, all I could think was, which cinema could take my money the fastest? It sounds amazing. Someone else says Jason Statham is seriously gorgeous. He can find my Meg any day. do you think he's seriously gorgeous?
No, but I think he's seriously Statham, and that's enough for me. I think he's certainly.
He can't do accents though, or does he do a kind of neutrally accent?
He does kind of badass. He speaks in badass,
right? Which is the international language of badass. Yes,
and he glints as he speaks, and he has. It's really interesting because he kind of went from a supporting actor on kind of crime movies and stuff like that to becoming a whole action star in his own right. Yeah. And he has a very, as those texts indicate, he has a very, very broad and on board for it fan base who go to see his movies because he's in them. And how many movie stars can you think of these days?
That is so true.
That do that. So he's kind of become a younger version of latter career Liam Neeson. It's like, let's put Liam Neeson on moving vehicles and let him beat people up. And it's like, yeah. I'd say they just sat down planning the Meg and said, okay, what will we have Jason?
What do you want to beat up this week?
This time? Hi, a giant prehistoric shark. There you go. There's right. 100 million.
Actually, speaking of, someone says they want to see the new Mission Impossible film. Why is Tom Cruise in every scene? He is literally in every second of the movie. He's so obsessed with himself. Terrible movie.
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was too long. It never justifies being 2.5 hours, but I thought it was really, as a pure action flick, much more so than any of the other films in the series. I thought it was really good.
Someone says they just read the Toy Story 4 is now scheduled to arrive in cinemas June 21st, 2019.
Yeah, so that's well in
both
development.
Sides of the Atlantic.
Yeah, so, that's well in development at this stage.
Yeah. The script's written then at that stage of the game. Is it possible to find South African wines Fairview Shiraz or Groot Constantia Shiraz in Ireland?
Yes, definitely. They're widely available. The Fairview wines are well distributed. You can have a look in O'Donovan's in Cork, Malloy's Carryout, I think, which should have some as well. So they're well, and I think Tesco and even Dunn Stores have them. So Fairview, very widely distributed. The Groot Constantia, that's the big one, is the big sweet wine there. And go to independents, and you'll find them in that. It's a very lovely wine.
Yeah, Brendan says, yeah, it was crap and all that. But that running scene, this is in Mission Impossible, is the best he's ever done. He outdid all previous Mission Impossibles. It was an epic run.
He outran
Brendan.
Himself. He did.
Did he run really well?
He did. And he just actually, apparently they did a lot of that run in one take because he bust his foot while filming a scene in this. And apparently he just kept running because he knew if he stopped, he wouldn't be able to do it again.
Right. So, it's my boyfriend's birthday and I bought him his favourite bottle of Pinotage. I want to make him a cake to pair with it. Would Tomás have any recommendations other than just chocolate cake?
Well, that's obviously you took the words right out of my mouth because that's what everyone does. If you're not going to do that, then the way to go is to go for a Madeira cake. What you want is a heavy, basically a heavy Victoria based sponge will work very well with it. What you want, the vanillin in it picks up and will accentuate the thing in the Pinotage. I'm amazed that he's a Pinotage fan because it's really only in the last sort of 5 or 6 years that Pinotage has swung round back into favour. But that's an avant-garde person and well worth hanging on to.
Right. And somebody on Twitter is already given out, that being Paul. Can't believe you gave away the ending of Toy Story 3. I was going to watch it tonight. Weekend in ruins now, says Paul. The hashtag, by the way, on Twitter is...
There has to be a statute of limitations on that.
I think he's joking. Because we did... what was the movie during the TV slot with John a couple of weeks ago, but the movie's like 32 years old, and somebody we gave away the ending of it. Right, the hashtag, by the way, on Twitter is Bad Tempered Movies, 12 Really Angry Men, Scumbag Millionaire, or That Time of the Month in the Country. Speaking of Venom, has Esther heard anything about Venom with Tom Hardy? The trailer looks a bit crap. I expected better from Hardy to be selling out for Marvel. At least in Batman, he got the Christopher Nolan treatment and it was a bit more credible, says Liam.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm on board with it. I haven't even watched the trailer, to be honest with you. You know my regular rant on this. They give away too much.
Yeah.
And I do watch them, but generally after I've seen the film. So I'm on board. He's kind of an anti-hero, Venom. He's a standalone character, and Tom Hardy's playing him. He's a great actor, and I'm well up for it.
Give it a chance. Eamon says The Rock may be the current successor to Schwarzenegger, but Statham is the new Chuck Norris. Whoa. Ooh. Talking a big talk there. And someone else says Jason Statham with a Hurley is the best scene ever.
With a Hurley?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that.
I think there is a film where Jason Statham has a Hurley and beats people up with a Hurley. I can't remember what the film is, but there is. I'm pretty sure there is such a scene.
I can imagine. Well, it's in my head and it feels real now.
It feels real now. So there you go. That's all we need. Yeah, it's called Blitz, apparently, the movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I've seen that one, actually.
What it's about. Yeah, it's set in the cutthroat world of inter-county hurling, obviously. Jason Statham plays the kid from Out of Town. Anyway, let's move on to our first wine of the day.
Our first wine of the day, we go for the Chardonnay to start with. This is Wynn's Coonawarra Chardonnay, South Australia. It is 2015, and it's available in 2017 as well, around $19.99. And you can get it at a lot of independents, Fresh, Devonies, Wine Centre, Kilkenny, O'Donovan's, Cork. It is a wine that is from the Coonawarra region, which is probably the most famous terroir region in the New World, and certainly was until 5 or 6 years ago, maybe. It's got terra rossa soil. So when you drag a plough through the soil in Coonawarra, you get red. You get blood red, orange, earth coming up at you, and this very very orange earth and red is full of minerals and all kinds of things, but a lot of ferric matter as well, so iron. So there's a lot of iron elements to it. It's hugely fecund, absolutely fecund, and it's one of these strange places that I kind of have the sort of M. Night
Shyamalan,
The Village. That film, The Village. Whenever I think about Coonawarra, I think about that film, because it was founded as a colony by a man called John Riddick in the 1860s. And he went out from Adelaide and went south, very far south. So this is in the very south of South Australia. Now, it's a cool climate, relatively, for Australia. But when you consider that the interior of Australia is basically burned desert, by the time you get down here, you're dealing with grass, and trees and a bit of lushness. And if you went and continued straight on, you would eventually hit New Zealand and the South Pole as the two next points heading south from where you are there. So it is south. And of course, always remember that when you're in the southern hemisphere, the further south you go, the colder you're always getting, because you're doing the same thing as travelling north for us up here in Europe. So this is far south of the places like the Barossa and so forth. And this man, John Riddick, went off down there and he got set up a kind of a station, a little cultish, really. He had a couple of 100,000 sheep in himself, and obviously got bored and lonely, and invited people to buy little tracts of land in and around Coonawarra to come down and start this farming. And it turned out to be a little Eden, and became hugely famous, because almost everyone who came down and joined his kind of colony commune, agricultural commune, did well, because everything they planted, fruit, became hugely fruitful.
Okay, I'm relieved now. I thought this was going to end with a massive shootout.
No, there was no shootout. They weren't keeping people in, and it wasn't 2018, really. Yeah. Oops, give that away too. And he did well. And 20, 30 years later, they started planting vines. And they really, it took off from there, because the vines really drew in the complex materials that were there. Also, they have a longer growing season because it's a little cooler, and they were able to get more complex flavors. So Coonawarra became this outrider place that became very famous. They do good sort of red wines, but they also make fantastically cool climate orientated Chardonnay. So this Chardonnay has those kind of cool climate ideas of, say, baked apple, pear, a little bit of vanilla, you know, touch. This is raised in French oak, so there's a touch of vanilla, and you get those kind of sweeter flavors. It's a big, old-fashioned Chardonnay from Australia, I suppose, I would say. So if you're somebody who's really come to Australian wine in the last 5 years, you'll be more in, orientated in terms of Chardonnay towards steel tank, precise, clean, linear Chardonnays, very Chablis-like, whereas this is much more toasty, much more, yes, a little bit opulent, a bit hotter. Now, they're claiming that it's 13%. I feel, when I'm tasting it, I feel it's more 14.
Yeah.
straight 14 than a 13. Now, the fun thing about this is they're allowed little variation. They can have some variation and it changes, but it feels muscular and powerful and kind of warm on the back of the on the back of the palate. But it's a really sort of fascinating sort of wine that I think is going to it certainly works very well. It decants. If you decant it, it even brings it out a little further, and you start getting white floral notes.
Okay, all right. Because I wouldn't think of decanting a white wine.
No, but it really, this benefits from it in the same way that you would for something very expensive from California or from Burgundy. So the Wynns sort of winery itself has become a place of pilgrimage on its own, because Riddick was associated with it and he helped build part of the structures. It's some of the oldest built environment in Australia. So when you go down, again, not too old. So you go down there, you're meeting stone buildings. But in that way, they were building for the long term in this kind of Eden-like community. And when you start looking at Australian wine generally, you'll begin to see that a lot of German and Italian sort of colonies sprung up as well. So the secondary overlay to Australian wine of any maturity is that they all come out of different countries, sort of little colonies. So Barossa had an Italian sort of colony, whereas there are some places that had Lutheran sort of exiles, and some people had people who were escaping different types of oppression. So this was a more open one, less religious, and a little more indulgent and a bit more opulent. So it doesn't have the religious Lutheranism of some of the Semillon sort of wines have, these kind of the more austere. And I think you can feel it in some way in the way that they make it. It's a fascinating wine at $19.99. It's not cheap, but it's very well priced for what it is, an enjoyable Sunday wine.
Yeah, I also want to go and visit there now after all that. Somebody did ask about Black Stallion wine. Brian on Twitter says Wicklow Wine have a few cases of Black Stallion. Good. So that's one place you can get it if you're in that neighbourhood. Ella in Cork says, just out of the cinema after watching The Meg, it's shite. Well, we'll see. We'll see what Esther has to say about that after the break. As we go into the break, though, here's a little soupçon of Jason Statham with a hurley.
Calling. This, lads, is a hurley. Used in the Irish game of hurling. Cross between hockey and murder.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Proudly sponsored by Carryout, Ireland's leading independent off-licence. Carryout.ie.
What you people discovered is bigger than we ever thought possible.
How big is that thing?
It was the largest shark that ever existed.
A living fossil.
Thought to have been extinct for over 2 million years.
Wrong.
My God.
It's a megalodon.
He's kidding, right?
There you go. That's a failed diver, Jason Statham, there in his latest movie, The Meg. We were just we none of us knew this before, but Tomás Bortas is new. See, that's what his sport was.
He was a diver in Commonwealth Games 1990.
Yeah. Looking very well in it as well.
Looking very well. Yeah. I really enjoyed this, but it's kind of nonsense.
Yeah,
that
well,
okay?
That's good. That's okay.
I don't think it's nonsense enough, though. I think there's a lot of criticism of this one, and I think that it's trying to be a serious action movie and also trying to be a cheese fest, and I think it falls a little short in doing both effectively. But I kind of love Jason Statham. Like, he just doesn't care. He's on the promotional interview tour for this film and he's been dissing it, which is such a which is such a no-no for a big studio movie. Like, he did an interview with Collider there just a couple of weeks ago and said there was supposed to be a lot more blood and gore, and that he signed up for a really gory action film, but it was all removed to get a better cert for a summer audience.
Yes, of course.
And the interviewer said, yeah, but it's great fun. And Statham says, yeah, but you go, where's the effing blood? Yeah. There's a shark. So that's his take on it. For my part, I think it's a very, very well-made B-movie. And you know, that term, I suppose, was originally supposed to refer to the second feature that showed on a matinee in cinemas. But that ended back with the 1950s. So what it really means is a big budget, a blockbuster that's made on a lesser budget and is kind of, you know, a bit screwball and a bit cheesy. And I really enjoyed it. They kind of had me at Statham versus giant prehistoric shark. But there is a scientific basis in this, Sean.
Of course there is, yes.
You might be surprised, and a historical one. Because the Meg, as we know it, was actually a creature, prehistoric creature that was absolutely ginormous, up to 59 feet long, and went, you know, ceased to be many years ago. But he's back with a bang here. And so the film, Megalodon, his name is, but it's so you need to believe that Statham's a deep sea rescue diver who is tasked with, he's actually saved people from this creature before, but it didn't all go well. He left a load of people behind, but his sense,
it's like Nam all over again. Yeah, okay.
His sense is that he saved a lot of people and he saved as many as he could. And his character's name is Jonas Taylor. He likes the beer. So he's a bit reckless. He's a bit gung-ho. You don't know what he's going to do next. And he is kind of brought into... So there's a deep sea expedition going to the bottom of the deepest trench in the Pacific off China, off the coast of China, because that's where all Hollywood blockbusters are set now, because the emerging Asian market is absolutely massive. But there's some great Chinese characters in it as well, so that's good to see. It's not just an American cast being shipped over. So they make this discovery. So here's the science-y bit, right?
Okay.
They think the ocean floor is...
Do it slowly now. We might get into it.
They think the ocean floor is the ocean floor, but it's so far below sea level that nobody's explored whether it's the actual ocean floor or a fake ocean floor.
Okay, because somebody could have installed a fake floor in.
Yes.
Often you get that when you're buying a house.
So this team go down and make the kind of groundbreaking, literally, discovery that the assumed ocean floor is a pathway to a deeper and much more expansive world underneath. So,
okay.
But unfortunately for them,
that's where
Meg lives there.
Yeah.
And the sciencey bit again, they've changed the temperature of the water by breaking through the fake floor. So that gives Meg the opportunity to come up and wreak havoc, basically. You've so many questions.
Okay, so many questions. Is it warmer underneath the fake floor or colder underneath the fake floor?
He can't get through because there's a body of cold water over him.
Yes.
So it's not very well explained in the film either, in my defence. Okay.
Now, down in this under the floor, is it just the Meg who lives there all by himself?
No, there are loads of creatures. Loads of creatures.
Okay, so we might be looking at a series of sequels.
Which Jason could be.
Statham's battling all sorts
of things. If he stops saying stuff on the press tour about the film, maybe. So he goes down to rescue the crew, among whom is his ex-wife, which I was going, the potential for fun in this is not being milked enough.
Yeah.
Because you need a great line when you open the escape hatch and you see your ex-husband down to save you, you know. I think she gets an I told you so or something. It's not good enough. Needs to be.
Yeah.
There's problems with the screenplay in this, actually. So, Yeah, the authorities are unaware of what's been going on. The Chinese oceanographer project in charge of this, they basically said, we need a fall guy, we need the fixer to come in and do this. So that's what he does.
Now, to come in and rescue people or to kill a monster?
Come in and rescue, and then to clean up the mess after the rescue that's allowed the giant prehistoric shark get through the escaping water.
And the giant
water.
Prehistoric shark, like, who's he attacking, or is he just minding his own business?
Everyone. He's just like, get out of my way. You're getting between me and my next meal. So it's a ferocious creature.
So is it like China he's eating, basically?
Yeah.
Or this is a metaphor for Trump's foreign policy. That's what this is.
Well, you would take that from it for sure. But yeah, he's really ferocious, actually, the shark. He made me jump a few times. He's awfully big. There's one great scene where a little girl is a very sweet little girl at the centre of all this lovely character. And she sees, so their research facility is underwater, but in what they thought were relatively safe waters. Mm. But it's a really cool production design element, actually, because it's like a massive aquarium where the humans are inside and the sea life is all around them. And her first sighting of this giant monster is really, really well done in the film. And it's quite jumpy. But it does fall between stools, I think. I really enjoyed it, I have to say. I just maybe was happy enough to park my brain outside and go in and have a bit of fun. I did enjoy it. I think it's pretty well made. The ending feels a bit rushed. You won't hear me say that too often. I usually give out about movies being too long.
Yeah.
But there's a kind of a lovely scene on a big Asian beach where there are loads and loads of people. They're sitting ducks for this approaching shark, basically. And it's very funny. There is a little Yorkshire Terrier named Pippin who's trying to frantically swim away from a very quick moving shark, and he's got a pink ribbon on his head because he's the mascot at a Chinese wedding, and the yacht party are desperately trying to save Pippin, and I won't reveal what happens, but I was really, really hoping that Pippin wasn't going to get lynched like a lot of other people do in this film. So that's what it is. I mean, it's interesting. I think it's always interesting what films are like on the page and what they end up being like. Because John Turteltaub, the director, has also come out because they're really towing the line on the press tour, these guys. He also came out and said that they had loads of bloody and gory deaths filmed, but they all ended up on the cutting room floor, basically. I thought it was still pretty scary. That's it. It'll do well.
Anya wants to know, is it suitable for a 10-year-old?
Yeah, I think so. It's 12A, so if you're an adult or guardian over the age of 18, you can bring someone under the age of 12. I would say it's big and noisy and bombastic, but I think a 10-year-old would be able for that, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Unless you're terrified of sharks, obviously.
Yeah, well, of course, that's not going to help. Tom Hardy, somebody asked about this movie Venom he's doing. Tom Hardy said he channeled Conor McGregor for the role in Venom. Well, that should be interesting then. Does the wine man know if Bellefontaine Cabernet Sauvignon is available in Dublin?
No.
No, there you go. When in Italy recently, I drank lots of Laguna. It was gorgeous. Can I get it here?
Yes, you can. It's also from Valpolicella.
Oh, right. Okay,
there are a lot of Valpolicella lovers out there. So the Laguna...
I imagine there is,
It's the white wine of the area.
Okay, right. I've been getting really nice Californian Cab Sauv in Supervalu recently called Dark Horse. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the Black Stallion wine the earlier texter was looking for, says Fiona, who's in Leash.
Yeah, very possible.
Could be well. That ever hear of Colleen di Levanto from Cinque Terre in Italy? Had it a couple of years ago. Couldn't get it here when we came home. The couple we went with still reminisce about it. That says Chris. So.
But that is the real problem.
That's the problem.
It's the fundamental problem with Italy. It's the one that Paolo Tullio constantly always talked about, that in Italy, foreign wine was the wine from the next village.
Yes. Brought my wife to Mamma Mia last evening. The worst film I've ever sat down to watch. Pierce Brosnan and 20 words in the film. I counted them out of sheer frustration, says Kevin Limerick. Pierce Brosnan's only got 20 words.
Yeah, I think he sang a little too much in the first one, so they gave him a break. €3.5 million at the Irish box office and counting in weeks. And it's 3 weeks in a row at number one as well. It's a while since I can remember a movie this year being 3 weeks at the box office. Yep.
Jason Statham is the movie version of Monkfish from The Fast Show, says a texter. And Baz says, wasn't Pippet the name of the dog that Jaws had for brunch? a bit of a nod by the Meg people, perhaps.
Ah, perhaps, yeah. And actually, some of the scenes on the beach are, well, for very obvious reasons, they're very reminiscent of Joe's as well.
Yeah, there's been a few mentions of that Pippet connection. Right, we do have to take a break out. One more wine, one more movie after this. 53106 is our text number that will cost you 30 cents. Tomás and Esther are still with us. We've had one Chardonnay and we've already talked about the Meg, Jason Statham's attempt at cracking Shakespeare, which people have been waiting for quite some time for him to do. Madeline wants to know, where can I get some Alto Plano Chardonnay 2009? I got a bottle as a gift and it was stunning.
I thought Mitchell's Mitchell and Son was what I was my initial thought, so I think we'll go with that. And I was thinking of the fresh group of smaller supermarkets. They're fresh. There's one near the there's one in town in Smithfield,
yeah,
and there's one out in near the Bord Gáis and the theatre. But an Independence we should be able to help.
Where's Lindemann's Bin 65 Chardonnay gone from the shelves of retailers in the Republic of Ireland? Susie wants to know.
Oh, this is a huge question. The Lindemann's were everywhere. They were a dominant producer. They're very, very good. There are a few of them out there, but basically what happens is they just fall out of fashion and other people come in and bid and get into that kind of mid-price sort of category. You can still find them in the north. Just in case you're particularly interested.
Thinking of bringing the kiddos to Hotel Transylvania 3, will it keep 2 7-year-olds and an 8-year-old entertained for a couple of hours?
Yeah, they're very much, I haven't seen the third one yet, but the films are very much kiddie orientated, so I don't think they get as many "oh my god, they're awesome" reviews from critics like us who are pretending to be grown-ups but really kids at heart falling in love with the latest Pixar. But I think they are more designed and geared towards children. And yeah, it's a family of monsters. Like, what's not to like?
Yeah. Anyone who thinks that The Meg would be a bad movie obviously have zero crack in them, because you go because it's a bad movie, like Sharknado. Well, that's true. It is kind of to miss the point otherwise. Is there any cinema that's still showing Sicario 2? I live in Ratoath in County Meath, so somewhere in a 40-minute drive would do. If you could be very specific in your knowledge on what every cinema in the country is showing off the top of your head.
Off the top of my head, no. But I will direct you to entertainment.ie, who have a very good database where if you go into their film section and do a search for that film, you should show up whatever cinemas are showing it in the region. So, yeah.
Dance wants to know, can you get Vranic here? It's a lovely red wine from Montenegro.
No, I haven't seen it here. We do know it, but it's again, it's one of these ones where, do you know, we did have it. It used to be sold underground behind the ILAC Centre. There was a little
very sinister
underground one. Yeah. There was a Polish and Slovenian sort of shop, and it was selling wines from all through the sort of Adriatic and right up to some Polish sort of wines indeed.
I've a few bottles of Tokaji, sounds maybe it's Japanese or something.
Okay.
Tokaji in the cupboard for 12 years, will it be okay?
Yes, it'll be absolutely fine. Tokaji. That's Hungarian sweet wine and it's almost immortal. So, you know, it will last. Don't worry about it at all.
Rosaline said, went to see Mamma Mia as Esther was so enthusiastic, didn't have half the charm of the first film. Well made, but almost too glossy and a bit patronising to the locals. Mm. Good, but not anything as enjoyable as the original.
Not rolling back, but I wasn't that enthusiastic.
You were raving. You're out of your mind about it.
I gave it a 3-star review, but I did enjoy it. I did enjoy it a lot more than the first film, actually, and I thought it was very sweet, but that's okay.
Does Tomás use a wine cooler at home? I'm wondering if I should buy one or even if I'd use it.
No, I bought several. I've never used them. Just pop the thing in the fridge and then take it from the fridge to where you're going.
Yeah, right. Valpolicella.
Valpolicella, this is the... Well, obviously, there's a lot of Valpolicella fans out there listening in today. So Valpolicella is the name of the Appalachian, if you will, that stretches from Verona up through to Lake Garda. So what you do is you go to Venice and you take a line directly due west from Vienna, and about middle way through you'll find from Venice, and it's part of the hinterland of Venice. And this is a very complex set of hills that are essentially the foothills and the end, the last fingers of the Alps. And they create, you've got white wines with Lugana, you've got red wines from half a dozen very, very locally idiosyncratic grapes like Corvina. There are just some amazing older grapes, and these older grapes have been preserved in and around Valpolcello because they make three dozen different types of wines there.
Yeah.
And they don't export a lot of it, of these smaller wines. The big thing for this region was that up until the World War II, this was the sweet wine region of Italy. And they made the wine which was called Recchiotto. And Recchiotto was, it was called Recchiotto del Valpolcello. And it was the sweet wine of Valpolcello. And it was a sweet red wine. And had high sugar content, was almost immune to oxidation. And so that's when the Romans and the medieval Dante loved it, and the Borgias loved it. So it became very famous. And that was the way it was. They produced nothing else. After World War II, half a dozen people there, the whole fashion for sweet wine died away. And what they did was they fermented their sweet wine, the Recchiotto, till it was completely dry. And then people tasted it and they said, this is sour. But it was, this is absolutely sour. But it was strange, because what they did was they made their red wine like they made their sweet wine. The way you make sweet wine in Italy, same for Vinsanto, but for Recchiotto, is you harvest the grapes. And then, unlike anywhere else, you don't go and press them. You put them up in the cellar or up in the attic of your house, and they dry out over the next 3 or 4 months. And then when you've got kind of what you do is you've increased the sugar content because you've taken out the water. Then you crush it and you make the sweet wine Recchiotto. But what they did was they let it ferment and ferment and ferment for months, all the way through till sort of the following March or April. And it fermented to dry. And so it was called the bitter wine of Amarone. Instead of Recchiotto del Valpolcello, which was the sweet wine, they called it bitter. And amor is bitterness in Italian. So Amarone della Valpolcello is the sour wine, the bitter wine of Valpolcello. Now, while they were at that, they also made just regular, plain, straight or ordinary red wine. And that's called just Valpolcello. So when you're out there, you'll see Valpolcello red wine, and you'll see something that's like €12 or €13. Very plain, straightforward, clean, well-made red wine. Then there's Amarone, which is £60 or £100, made in this very complicated way. And then we have this wine, which is the intermediate bit, and it's called Ripasso. So this is the this particular wine is the Luigi Righetti Campolietti Ripasso from Valpolcello. And what that is Campolietti just means the beautiful field. That's just the name of the thing. But what it is it's Ripasso from Righetti. You'll find them in carryouts across the country. It's around about €18. It's imported by Carwig Wines in Carrigaline. And it is a Ripasso, which is what they do is they get the Valpolcello straight, Valpolcello wine, and then they pour it over the used grapes that's been made for the Amarone.
Right, okay.
So the Amarone wine is made. That's going off for £100, £150 a bottle. Then they have all those grapes still left there. There's goodness in them. And what they do is they pour. Yeah, this is the idea. So they're far. You can see it's a farming community thinking about this. They then pour the Valpolcello. They repass it. That's the Ripasso, over the top of the other wines. It restarts the fermentation, broils up again, and it's kind of like a big squeeze of the tea bag, and it gives it another squeeze. But the tea bag in this case is the very expensive Amarone grapes that are there, and they give this kind of power. So you get this extraordinary. Sort of powerful, dark fruited sort of heart to what is a well-made middle line sort of medium bodied wine. But you get that, you can feel the power after a sort of a glass or two, you can actually feel that sumptuousness, but then the cleanliness of the straight wine just keeps it in balance. A really good comprise. Some people call it a baby Amarone.
And, right, okay.
So that's the way to think about it. And for, €18 rather than 50 or 80, a really fascinating An exciting way to get into upmarket Italian wine.
That's absolutely, that's a lovely Valpolicella. Yeah. I must say, isn't Valpolicella a bit like Sauvignon Blanc that you can't really make any general comments about it? There's so many different varieties of it.
There are. It's a region, you know, it's an appellation, and within there, so you've got the Valpolicella, the, you know, the red plain, the Amarone, and then this one. So what you want to do is keep an eye out for Ripasso, which is your step up, your intermediate step towards Amarone. But if you've got the money for Amarone, away you go.
Yeah. Right, we'll move on to our second movie of the day. It is Sergeant Stubby, an American hero. In this clip, Stubby meets Robert Conroy for the first time.
How's this dog get in here? Get out! Get out of here!
Get off of me. Come on, go. I don't have any more food. Go away. Shoot. Come on. You can get me in trouble. Get off. Get off. Go. Shoot. Shoot. Go. Get away.
Right, there you go. That's Sergeant Stubby, an American hero. So I suppose, describe the kind of animation it is, or what would it be the closest thing to that people would know?
Well, it's traditional computer generated animation, which is what most animation is now. Even the hand drawn stuff is done on screens and ends up being projected, you know, being designed on computers. So it's very sweet. I'd say the budgetary constraints of this sometimes show in the animation. But I loved the actual dog at the centre of it all and the story of it all. It's 73 minutes, so it doesn't overstay its time either. It's a nice, simple story, but it's not trying to stretch it out. But the story behind the making of this is almost as sweet as the film itself, because it's made by a guy by the name of Richard Lanny, an English documentary maker, and he makes a lot of documentaries for public service TV in the US. And he had made a series of World War II documentaries. So he was approached by the World War I Memorial Commission to do something to mark the end of World War I later this year. But he came across this story of Stubby and was just beguiled by it, really, but also was going, I want kids to know about this dog, but how do we tell them the story about the horrors of this war, you know, in a way that would appeal to kids and not be too distressing? So he thought it has to be animation. He has a holiday home in Kinsale, so he went and raised some funding through various Cork businesses. I think three million of Cork funding has gone into this.
So this is a Cork film.
They can claim it. They claim a lot of things, and they can certainly partly claim this. And then it was he joined forces with Technicolor, of course, the famous company in the US who own a few various animation studios, and they developed everything and storyboarded everything, but then let the animators do their own work, do their thing. So it really takes gumption. Like, they've broken every rule in the book of filmmaking. This, they've worked outside the studio system, they've joined forces with a big studio, but, you know, kept creative control of it themselves. They're releasing it independently. Frankly, when I first heard about it, I was a bit concerned, because you do get we didn't get funding and we didn't get any support from distributors, so we're releasing it ourselves. And oftentimes that means it's not very good.
But it was really
a really pleasant surprise, this one. They've got a fairly starry voice cast on board as well, including Logan Lerman and Helena Bonham Carter. 83% positive reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. This film is unconventional. It's quirky. But people seem to be really warming to it. So if you're, all I can say, if you're a World War II or World War I obsessive, history obsessive, who has young kids, go and get to see it this weekend, because there's plenty for both of you there.
Okay, and is it, in terms of distribution, how widely is it distributed?
I think it's opening pretty widely, yeah. It's opening, I don't know the exact number, but it's a national release for sure. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Good stuff. Right, thanks very much, Esther. Claire's here to tell us about some good things to do this weekend.
Hello. In Kilkenny, the inaugural Kilkenny Potter's Market is on this Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on both days. It's part of the packed Alternative Kilkenny Arts Fringe Festival lineup. There'll be 18 different potters and ceramic makers from all over Ireland selling their pottery and sculpture, including the Bridge Pottery, Caro Art, Maple Tree Pottery. So you can get full details on everything if you go to the Facebook page, which is Kilkenny Potter's Market, or on Instagram you can see some lovely pictures on at potter's market_Kilkenny. And then in Dublin, we've only just begun, is making its festival debut this weekend. It actually started yesterday, but it's running until Sunday the 12th. It's in Whelan's. It's showcasing incredible talent in the heart of the city centre. So tonight you'll see the likes of Kathy Davey, Wyvern Lingo. Tomorrow you'll see Susie Blue, Amy Montgomery. Sunday, Sorka Richardson, Roe, Aisling Logan. Loads and loads of other acts on every night. Whelanslive.com for all the details, ticket options, pricings and so on. There you are.
Good stuff. Thanks very much, Claire. Thanks, of course, also to Esther and Tomás. Always a pleasure. Our production team today, Niamh Hassel, Claire Collins, Anne-Marie Kane and Peter Malloy. Is it Ivan up next?
Who's Kieran.
Kieran up next, sitting in for Ivan. We'll talk to you on Monday. Have a lovely weekend.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Proudly sponsored by Carry Out Off License. Simply better wines and beers. Carryout.ie.